It's second Saturday, which means it's time for the Astoria Art Walk. And I've got a couple of artists coming in. First, let's hear a little bit of music. We'll come back to them. Some music from Chris Parker, who is performing tonight at Gala in Astoria. And I don't know what happened to his newer albums. I found one from 1991, and it's surely his. His picture is here, so let's have a listen. And again, you can check in at Gala tonight. That's Chris Parker from a 1991 release. I'm delighted to say he comes back every year, although he's been living and performing and professing in New York City for many years. So tonight, he's got Tim Wilcox, Damian Erskine, and Jason Palmer playing with him at Gala. Concert starts at 8, doors open at 7:30. Good idea to get there early or get your tickets somehow online, and enjoy the concert. And tomorrow night is Art Walk, as I mentioned. My first guest is Roger Hayes, who has been making music and art here in Astoria since when?
Oh, 1989? 88,
right?
Maybe?
1988.
Late 80s?
Close enough. Has art always been top dog and music next, or are they balanced, or do they flip back and forth? How does it work in your life?
I think they flip back and forth, and I think for a while it was kind of like a cross-informed process, but I think now you see a lot of artists who are very multidisciplinary, so there's just ways that they're expressed simultaneously. I don't think I've exactly perfected that, except that maybe, say, like with some of the live painting stuff I've done with other people's music, that might be closer
right.
to that.
Oh, that goes way back, too. I remember.
Yeah. Yeah. Beta Clyde came here a few times.
Yeah. That was fantastic. Right. And I hadn't seen that before. now one does see more of some of the things that you've been doing for a long time. But
it's pretty common on YouTube. Just put in one search,
right?
And then you find like a dozen of them. They're all like, oh, that's great, you know.
Wow, that's why I don't do it.
And then you're there all day.
There forever, exactly, exactly. So you have recently been an Astoria Visual Arts artist in residence, is that right?
Right. So this show is in part brought to you by Astoria Visual Arts. They're kind of like the main reason it happened, I think. And that's what they do in this community, is promote events like that. They have the artist in residency, and they're adding on new programs all the time.
How did that work? What happens? You get a space.
Mm-hmm.
Do you get any directives as to what you need to do or have to do? Or
No, but there's probably a certain level of expectation that goes with having a space and creating art and showing it there. I mean, I opted to show openings for every month.
Which was lovely, yeah. People got to come in and see your work in progress during the residency. Is some of the work that we're going to see tomorrow night from the residency, actually? Or
I think just about all of it, but, you know, it all kind of evolved.
Okay, so the name of the show is Memento Mori, which, just as a standalone, has a beautiful rhythm to it. However, it goes much further. It's Latin for Remember You Must Die. I think there's a song from, as I said it, I hadn't said it out loud before. Remember, you must die. Remember, you must die. Okay, tell us, what are we going to see? I've got a postcard in front of me with two beautiful images. And I'm just wondering also, because this Coffinberry one is huge.
It's about 6 feet square.
And you did that in that small space?
That was one of the live performance paintings. It was done in ink. So there's a certain shtick there that you've seen it. So involves, you know, painting on the other side of the screen, and then the paint appears, and it looks like there's this magic painting appearing. But
there is. What do you mean it looks like? It is magic.
You can
magic,
watch it happening
sure.
as it happens. But so part was like that process, but then turning it into a final work of art, you know, which isn't what it was happening then. That was just one step along the way. And there's two of those.
So it says ink on muslin. Or muslin. Muslin.
Muslin.
Yeah. But did you paint first and then ink or what? Because this has got background colors.
Well, you were there, right?
I was, but the listeners weren't.
Oh, okay, I see.
I want you to
Well, they have to
tell.
Visualize.
Okay.
They have to describe
okay,
it.
Okay, everybody close your eyes and let Roger
Well,
describe.
What do you see there? You see ink and you see, like, there's a neutral background and there's color. And the color wasn't happening at the live performance.
Mm-hmm.
That was added with Conte crayons.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very simple design. It looks a lot, almost like a woodcut, like a Japanese woodcut in a way.
That's funny you use the word simple, because for me this is one of the, it looks so complex because it's so much detail and delicious interwoven lines, as well as, I mean, I could just get into one little space there and there's all this stuff happening.
Awesome.
But then you back up and you see perhaps tree trunks. It could be whatever anybody wants it to be, actually, because it's kind of extracted. What were you thinking of?
I've done that type of thing a lot of times, just kind of free form, you know, whatever's coming out of my subconsciousness type of thing. That was actually designed before the night opened up.
Mm-hmm.
So it was already outlined in pencil. I just followed the pencil lines. Normally it's just completely improvised. But it was a design. Yeah. I mean, it was intended to create a certain mood.
Oh, how do we connect this with Memento Mori?
Well, that's the $64 million question.
That's why you're here. There are a lot of people who will come to see this show, whether they're able to come and see it tomorrow evening. And this is at Imogen Gallery, which is on 11th and Marine Drive in Astoria. during Art Walk, which is 5 to 8. There are other people who will come whenever they get to Astoria or have the time. And then there are lots of people listening who, as I mentioned, in New York and British
They'll
Columbia,
never see it.
They may never see it. So,
but they might go to the Imogen website.
There you that's true. That's true. Why don't you give us some of the background, though? Where are you coming from when you're doing this work?
Well, with that, I mean, that's really kind of in conflict with the title. What you see there in the title are kind of two different things. And I had to kind of go out on a limb to describe that. I mean, the memento mori thing was kind of one thing, and this thing happened along with it, and I had to kind of describe a way that it would fit in together. Because the memento mori piece was strictly like doing skulls, and so the skulls were like just a motif, like a traditional artistic motif that you improvise on. The idea being that you know something well enough that you can improvise on it, like say a musical type of thing. So that's why that happened. But these were also kind of calculated too. But they, I think I was trying to refer to like, you know, organic processes where things happen in nature that aren't necessarily obvious to the eye, but there are always, you know, an exchange of energy. Things are breaking down. Things are rebuilding. Things are yielding their elements, their nutrients, you know, carbon, all these things that are becoming other things. And it's a process of destruction. I mean, it's kind of obvious when you look at nature. So that's, in a way, it's kind of like any at any given moment, it's a remembrance of what was. It's becoming something different.
And when you talk about destruction, followed by regeneration, because whatever comes apart, if we let it, if we don't clean the whole thing up and cover it with cement or something like that, which many people do. Interesting that you said you went out on a limb, because
that's
there
what it
we
is.
Are.
Yeah, exactly.
they definitely feel like limbs. On the other hand, they also feel, for me, dancing. This is very, there's a lot of movement in here.
That's why I picked those two images. They're both kind of, in particular for the type of forms. But usually, like I was saying, that type of thing would kind of just come out, you know, like it's kind of rhythmic way of painting, because usually music involved. And but, I mean, they are more calculated.
And this one, the carpet moss, is acrylic and Conti crayon. So on also on muslin. Did you all? But you did on paper and as well, didn't you? Yeah. So you've got quite a variety. So the skulls are what? Drawings, paintings?
They like I was saying, they were intended to just be something that happened spontaneously. They didn't really turn out that way. Like they too kind of went off in a different direction I wasn't really intending when I started. Because normally I like to do something like that and let it just kind of, I don't know, like, almost like action painting, you know, like I'm going to get it done in an hour and that's going to be the end of the story.
So what happened?
Well, they just wanted, I think instead I kind of wanted, had this kind of like Cézanne type of frame of mind where you're like kind of painting tonally instead.
that works.
Like, you know, like kind of like classical French painting like Poussin or Cézanne, that type of thing where you're trying to tonally create an optical impression. So I kind of got lost in that part of it instead of being like, oh, it's just going to be action painting and it's going to happen in, you know, do the whole thing in a half hour. So it's not what I expected.
Yeah. I think that's what they call art.
And really,
artist.
That's what my problem
Isn't
is, huh?
Yeah, I think so. That's your definite
that's
problem.
That's why I have so many hang-ups.
I see, you and everybody else. So. But you did use trees a lot in the... are we going to see a lot of tree images in this?
Pretty sure. I haven't been down there yet. I've kind of caught a glance, but there's at least two large ones.
And your background, and I know we've talked about this before, but a lot of people still hear the term outsider art and don't know what it is. And you have been, that label's been put on you, and you have also talked about it. And so can you just tell us, because there are lots of new listeners who've never heard this before, what is outsider art? And how do you intersect with it or not?
Well, that's several cans of worms.
Let's see. Okay.
We got like
got a
2 minutes
of minutes
to explain what that means. You know, I think like anything, like I try to use, I mean, I'm sure most people do this, but I try to use the internet to reference things. I mean, there are a lot of things I assume I know and I'm used to knowing it one way. And I'm like, well, what do people think of this thing, you know? And so I'll watch some videos or try to look up different definitions. And I actually ran into a pretty good video the other day on outsider art in Europe about a museum that was collecting. So if you wanted how a snapshot of like outsider art is, I think a lot of people who first came to be recognized, and this is probably not the rule, and there are exceptions, but as outsider artists probably practiced in a non-art academic context. Mm-hmm. Like, for instance, one of the people I was seeing a biography on was he was actually like a, I think, a military pilot. He crashed, he was traumatized, he couldn't speak, and he was institutionalized. And then at one point there was a recovering, somebody there for alcohol recovery who could see what a great artist he was, and he started supplying him with all these paints and brushes. And then suddenly this guy's creating just, you know, masterpiece after masterpiece, and now they're collected. You know, there's museums full of it. So it's kind of like you say, like something that's not intended to happen, but it happens out of a drive to, you know, a compulsive need to express something. It's not necessarily schooled in a way that it has, you know, an overall meaning, or, but it's kind of like out of the drive to express something. And I think you see it a lot in people who are handicapped in some way because they maybe don't have the same ability, same outlets that maybe, you know, like verbal or intellectual or, you know, ways to get these ideas out. So it has that kind of connotation that this person's main mode of communication is through art.
Well, you know, when you mention the internet, I have to chuckle because I think you were doing this long before the internet became the popular way to access information.
Well, so you talk about labels. Yeah, I think when I first... So if I go back to, say, like 1986, I was being called an expressionist painter. And then within a couple minutes, I met this guy who collected outsider art. And I was like, okay, I'm down with this. This is what I'm going to do for a while. You know, kind of art brood and outsider art. And because I already knew those artists, like Jean Dubuffet, like he's like the god of, you know, outsider painting. I totally got that stuff. I was like, I can do that. Not so much like, you know, I can do that, but, you know, like I feel at home here. This is my aesthetic.
Where are you at home now, Roger Haynes? Fortunately, you're still here. We're very happy.
Right now, it's in the studios of KMUN.
Oh, I see. We're in the moment. We're memento non more. Well, the show, Rogers, this is your third solo show at Imogen.
I've been there a while.
And that's great. Is Imogen Gallery this Saturday night, that would be tomorrow evening from 5 to 8. The show, I'm sure, will be hung before that. It may even be
I think it's hung right
by now.
Yeah.
So if you're in town only today or something else is going on for you tomorrow night, get over there. But what's fun about the art walk is that I'm presuming you will be there much of the time.
I think so.
So.
But I might want to see John Clark's show,
I
too.
Know. I was thinking that's the problem with being a featured artist is you're kind of
stuck
with your...
You're tethered.
Because people want to see, that's the artist. So if you're curious, you can catch Roger Haynes. He does roam around this town of ours, and he is always surprising us with what he's got. He was also a programmer here on KMUN and had all kinds of equipment in the studio, computers and strange music, and some wonderful music happening in the area. Are you doing that anymore at this point? You are still.
I have my bandmate, Greg Skloff.
Okay. Greg, who is a current programmer here at KMUN. So it all comes together. Thank you, Roger.
Thank you,
and,
Carol.
And the name of the show again, Memento Mori and More. How's that? And then some.
And
we'll see you tomorrow night.
Awesome. Thank you.
Okay. And I have some music this weekend. Well, you know what? Yeah. Let me tell you about this first and then play some music and let my next guest come in. This weekend, Actually, Monday is Martin Luther King Jr.'s birthday. That would be Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. And there are some celebrations or ways of honoring him going on both in the North Tillamook area and here in Astoria as well. Here's some music, and do stay with us. Lots more to the show.
We shall not be moved. We shall not,
move
just like a tree.
Let's stand by the water.
We shall not be moved.
Maybe you don't know that until the 1930s, the American labor movement was also Jim Crow. They had it written into their constitutions, white only. It was the radicals that came along and said, we're not going to be able to, get what we want for our unions and our working people unless everybody's in them. In the 1930s, this song was made up. Of course, it used to be an old gospel song. Jesus is my captain, I shall not be moved. We Shall Overcome was another union song, which later on became better known in the 60s. They made a very significant change. Instead of, I will be saved, hell with them, it's we. That wonderful first-person plural. Now, of course, the verses change every time you sing it. That's the wonderful thing about Afro-American folklore. You're never twice the same. And I'm just singing some of the verses that I've been singing the last half year or so. And we need some harmony. I mean it. You know, the musicians can show the politicians. Not everybody has to sing the melody. And on this song...
While they're still figuring out what they want to do with that song, I'm going to bring on my next guest, and we'll come back to Pete in a little bit. Okay. And he's always such a pleasure to listen to and to feel his energy. So we'll get back to him. But right now, I have someone else who's working on... This is almost, you know, the last... My guest Roger Hayes was talking about his show Memento Mori, which means remember you must die. And I didn't think of it this way, John Gutenberger, but you know, that's a good introduction for your what you're talking about, because you did just the opposite. You kind of are helping to save this.
Sure.
So you're going to tell about a place that almost did die.
That's right.
So this is John Gutenberger, who is going to be presenting. It's the Clatsop County Historical Society's TNT. That'd be Thursday Night Talks.
Yes, that's right.
At the Lovell Room of Fort George. And this is on the 18th, so that's a week from last night, coming up this coming week. And John is trained in architecture and historic preservation. He's part of that team that created the preservation course that has become so popular at the college. And his talk is called A Family Residence in Decline. Now, if you live in Astoria or come to Astoria, you know exactly what he's talking about, right?
That's
right.
Tell
us, John.
So I'm doing a lecture, or a talk, rather. I'd like to call it a talk rather right. than a lecture, because
yeah.
it's part public history and it's part... Frankly, performance art, because it is storytelling.
So I'm talking about the Flavelle House, also referred to as the other Flavelle House on 15th and Franklin.
That's right. I didn't think of it that way. But tell folks who don't know why it's the other Flavelle House.
Well, it's the other Flavelle House because it was constructed for the son of the captain. And as time went on, the descendants lived in the house, and three of the descendants, the great-grandchildren of the captain and their mother, left and abandoned the house. And the house was empty for 25-plus years. Mm. And during that time, the yard grew up around it, and vines took over, and it became kind of a wonderful ruin in and of itself.
Yeah.
But it also was a hazard. And was the source of a lot of consternation for folks as, what can we do about this building?
It is a gorgeous, gorgeous structure. And to see it going back into the earth, I mean, we say, a lot of us believe in impermanence, but we didn't really want to lose that building.
No, it was one of my favorite houses. It still is one of my favorite houses in town. It, just the way it sits up on that site.
Yes. One of my favorite parts is that window, the corner window that's curved.
Yes.
I've been watching that because they had plywood over it squared away, and I thought, oh, please, please don't take it away. And now I see it's...
It's a small miracle that lasted without somebody breaking that window.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. So give us a little history for folks who don't know, and then explain how this works, that it's possible for a building to sit there so prominently. And so,
Well, the house was most recently owned by Florence Flavelle and Harry and Mary Louise Flavelle. And they are, again, one of the more prominent families in the area. And they got into legal trouble. The most recent one, at least that caused this end, was that Harry got in an altercation with a young man. There was a stabbing. It turned into what was at that time the longest criminal court case in the history of Clatsop County, if not Oregon.
When was this?
1983.
Mm-hmm.
And by 1990, they had determined that they had... basically made all the requirements of the trial, and they took off.
And disappeared, basically.
And disappeared, yes.
Right, right.
And so they left behind this wonderful house, which, among other things, besides being a wonderful house, had, as far as I was concerned, a lot of artifacts in it that I did not want to lose as well. I mean, things that talk about the history of the family, photos and other things.
How did you know about that?
By mostly talking with folks and making some assumptions, too, that was the case. And, I mean, my lecture is based on digging a lot in archives, but also speaking with the Flavelles themselves.
Uh-huh.
And so as they were on the other side of the coast living from between 1990 to 2000 before they returned to the Northwest, once they were found, I got a hold of them. I mean, the phone number was in the storefront downtown forever. It wasn't like that was a mystery.
Right.
So I just dialed the phone number that was in the storefront I got them.
That's outrageous. This sounds like old school.
It's old school detective work
here.
Right. And so I had a lot of conversations with them about their house and about my concern about their house and wondering when something might happen.
Mm-hmm.
So some of the talk is based on those conversations as well.
What kind of reception did you get?
A pretty good one from the standpoint that I've known them most of my life.
You grew up here.
I grew up here. We moved here, you know, when I was going into I was in elementary school.
Mm-hmm.
So I've known them for a long time. Even before they left, I had conversations with them. So I was a known quantity.
Because you were already in the preservation... in the field of
preservation. Yeah, right. I mean, I turned up on their porch one time wanting to take pictures of their house, and Mary Louise and I talked on the porch. There was no other need for introduction.
Right. Yeah, you weren't some ferner coming in to grab their spots.
So. Right, yeah.
So tomorrow, I mean, Thursday evening, what time is that happening?
Doors open at 6, and the speech starts at 7 o'clock.
Right, and this is at the Lovell Room of the Fort George. That's on 14th Street, just south of Duane.
Right.
I had to picture it in order to get
that right.
Right. And you can get eats and drinks there while you're there.
Yeah.
Are you going to be showing slides or
video? In fact, I've actually done this once before. I did it as a fundraiser, but this is the picture version. Before, I stood in the house and gave this talk on the stairs in the house.
Okay.
But now I'm expanding. I'm showing photos. I want to get context, all of that in.
Right. And are we now? Bring us up to date now. We won't spend too much time on this, but let us know how the miracle happened that this...
The miracle happened for at least two reasons. Number one, Mary Louise got a friend. She was befriended by a legal assistant, I think, is her title, that ushered her through. She trusted her to look out for her. Mm-hmm. That's number one. Number two, the city forced their derelict building program. And between the two of these things, being fined by the city and having somebody that Mary Louise trusted...
take her through and show her a way out.
Show her a way out.
Yes.
The house was sold.
Yeah.
And it was sold to Greg Neuenhoff, one of the owners of City Lumber. He is doing an absolutely spectacular job of restoration of that building.
It's very exciting. I drive by it. Every time I come to Astoria, I drive right by.
Yeah.
And it is such a joy.
Yeah.
It's such a different feeling now. Instead of feeling sad and bad that this thing is going into the ground, it's like we can see it improving and coming alive again. And,
coming alive.
Yeah. And he cares, obviously, to get it right and knows how. So again, you are going to be telling folks and... some really good juicy stories too.
Right. I mean, it's those who are coming for a discussion on legal matters, they're
forget
not going to get it. No. Those who are coming for a public flogging aren't going to get it either.
Right. Yeah,
so.
Right. But this is a delicious way to learn some history. And also, I'm sure you'll be taking some questions. So.
Yes, there's limited time.
Okay.
I know people want to talk, but sure.
Maybe afterwards, or at least they'll find out who you are and how to get hold of you.
Right.
Because you are a wealth of information about this town. Whenever people coming to town want to buy a building or something, go to John. There's two people in town. I send them to Lisa and you.
Oh, right, sure.
Lisa at the Historical Society and you. And it's great that you're willing to and that you have so much knowledge and experience. How's the program going, by the way, the preservation?
Excellent.
Yeah.
We have lots of students, and they seem to be enthusiastic, coming from different backgrounds. So
and all over the country.
All over the country.
Fantastic. Yeah. You guys did it, Tori. You and Lucian, and was it Jay Raskin?
Jay Raskin was involved with that. Ed Overbay also.
Ed Overbay?
Yeah.
Okay. Wonderful. Wonderful. Yeah. Taking advantage of being in a place like this, with buildings like this, and putting your knowledge and skills to it. Brilliant. Yeah. Okay, thank you so much, John Gutenberger. Again, from the Clatsop County Historical Society, the Thursday night talk, TNT, January 18th at the Lovell Room. Starts at 7, doors open at 6. A family residence in decline. That's the past. Now it's coming back up, and perhaps not as a family residence. We'll find out. Thanks so much, John. Okay. And this is Coast Community Radio. Let's hear the rest of that. Pete Seeger. Whoops, that wasn't right. There we go.
We shall not be moved.
Silent ground.
country together.
We shall not be broken.
Yeah.
City and country
together.
We shall not be broken.
Oh,
just like a tree. We stand by the water. We shall not be broken.
We shall not.
We shall not. We shall not be broken. We shall not. We shall not be broken. Just like a tree. Let's stand by the water. We shall not be.
So what's going on for to honor Dr. King in Astoria? We have on Sunday, we have the film Selma at 2 o'clock at the Liberty, brought to you by the Astoria International Film Festival, and then a candlelight vigil through town. Then we'll be ending up at the Blue Scorcher and for hot drinks and discussion, and someone from the Astoria Warming Center will be there to talk with us. On Monday, there is a service day at the Astoria Warming Center, and you can find out more about that. I'll give you some you can call me after the show. That's the best. And in Nehalem and Manzanita, it's the Power of Love weekend on Saturday at 4 p.m., the documentary film No Joke. And that's at the Nehalem Bay United Methodist Church. And then a meal and discussion moderated by Pastor Steve Wolf. Sunday at the Hoffman, 6 o'clock storytelling, Unsung Heroes. And Monday, they have partnered with Habitat for Humanity for service in 6 homes. And I have a phone number for that if you're interested. We also have on at the Hoffman on Saturday night, we have Dare to Tell, Crossing the Columbia with York, with Gideon Formukwai. Okay, more coming, but right now I want to welcome my guest, John Clark. Hi, John.
Good afternoon.
Roger mentioned you in his interview. He said he wants to go over and see what you're doing. So tell us, what are you doing? You are the Astoria Visual Arts. You've got the pop-up gallery.
Yes, that's correct.
So tell us what that means.
Well, it's just a small space that I was given to show in, and I'm going to be showing recent work and some old work. It's all about multiple images. I'm a printmaker, so mm-hmm. It's all about multiples. I'm an intaglio printmaker, but I've branched out into three-dimensional pieces now that are kind of based on the same concept that I can make multiple images. They're masks and portraits of people I know, and I can make editions of them.
Made out of what?
Cast bronze, aluminum, and cast iron.
Oh, okay.
It's kind of a new thing for me, but I've been actually working on it for 10 years, and it's kind of just come to fruition, the whole project.
Well, pardon me for knowing a little bit about you, but don't you work in metal?
All the time, yes. I'm an iron worker.
You're an iron worker, exactly. That's your day job, as it were.
Correct.
And so that makes kind of sense, doesn't it? Or is it?
It feels
totally
very natural to me.
Yeah.
And I don't know why I didn't think of it earlier.
Dealing with that material. Interesting. And what kinds of, I read something about perception of childhood memories.
All my work is based on that. All my work is actually, no matter what the image, it's always a self-portrait, really. And that's what I draw on for just about all my inspiration.
Can I mention the three things that I jotted
down?
Sure,
go ahead.
Okay, Catholicism, Republicans, and the Great Depression. Those are pretty powerful things to be dealing with, yeah?
Yes, well, we always had formal dinners every night, and Sunday was very formal, and with all my relatives, very strong Catholics and Republicans, and they loved to tell us about the Great Depression. And it made a big impression on me.
Yeah, but you seem to have grown in different directions.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm the only Democrat in 4 generations.
Wow. Does your family live in Oregon?
They live in Portland, yes.
They do. Wow. And so you're still friends?
Absolutely.
Oh, that's fantastic.
That's my family.
That's good. Well, not all families are able to get together in that way. So you are also a founding member of Astoria Studio 11.
Correct.
And that's where you have your press. Can you tell us in 25 words or less, what's an intaglio press?
It's basically like a giant wringer washer. It's two rolls with a bed that rolls between them, and we ink a plate by hand and put damp paper on it. It's the same process Rembrandt used. Very, very old process, about 500 years old. Very kind of low tech.
Okay, what's the big, that big circle thing you
the
have?
Wheel?
The wheel.
Well, you need that to run the bed through the rollers. It's a very heavy piece of equipment, and
it sure is. So I
have to hand turn it for every proof, for every print.
See.
So each one is actually, even though it's an edition, each one is an original work of art.
Right. Can people ever see you actually working?
Oh, yeah, all the time. I can look in the window. I'm in there.
Okay, at Studio 11.
Correct.
Okay, and that's on the corner of 11th and Exchange. Folks, if you haven't seen one of these wheels, what he called a wheel, it looks like something out of perhaps the torture chambers where they would strap people onto.
Oh, yeah, the rack.
The rack, that's it, yeah. I didn't know that was what I thought that was part of the actual printing. So what is your, and you're also an Astoria Visual Arts board member. That's fairly new.
Yes, just recently, yes.
Recently, congratulations on that. What is your, do you have formal art background?
Yes, I actually was a painting major in the 70s. And toward the end of my tenure at Portland State, I took a printmaking class, intaglio printmaking class. And I was so impressed with the results, I abandoned painting and just pursued printmaking.
Boy, that's an interesting story, because here in Astoria, that happened to a number of people studying with Royal Nebuchadnezzar.
Yes.
They just dropped whatever they were doing and got into printmaking. What, can you articulate what is the big draw? What pulled you into that?
Well, for me, I'm primarily, these days, I'm a draftsman. I like to draw. And the intaglio method or process produces lines and tones that I can't get any other way. Very rich, dark, black tones that really stand out. And I don't know any other method that will give me that results.
Interesting.
And it's very labor intensive, but the results are so wonderful. I just can't abandon it.
Right. And do you ever use color?
Occasionally. Mostly black and white. I love black and white.
Right, right. I do too. And I was just sitting here thinking, I don't remember seeing color in your work.
There'll be one color piece in the show.
Okay. The other thing that Roger mentioned that made me immediately think of you was skulls.
Absolutely. It's one of my motifs.
Yes, it is. Why? How did that happen? Because we started with him talking about Memento Mori, which is the name of his show, Remember You Must Die. And then he brings up skulls, and I didn't say anything when he was there, but I'm thinking right away, John Clark.
I have always worked with the human figure, and I've always been intrigued with anatomy. And the Memento Mori, or whatever it is, it means a lot to me. I was raised Catholic.
Oh, yeah.
And so one of the main points in Catholicism is you're going to die. That's the bottom line.
True with most of us, but yes.
But they want you to be prepared for it.
Okay.
And
okay.
Even in art history stuff, the skull has always been that motif. Remember, you're going to die.
I see. Okay. So that's been with you for a long time.
Since before I went to grade school.
Wow. What, did you used to sketch things? Or?
I've been, my earliest memories in life are drawing.
Mm-hmm.
Probably about 3 years old. My mother actually provided me with an easel and materials, and I've just always drawn.
And And where did the ironwork come from?
I wanted to be an artist, and you have to, what I do is very expensive. You have to have a job. You got to have something else going on to do what I do. I've just purchased a second press. It's very costly to do this type of work, but it's worth it to me. So,
I know Studio 11 has at times rented space to people or given workshops or things like that. Have you ever, do you have any interest in, or have you ever given a workshop in this kind of material to other people? Or?
Yes. In fact, just today, a fellow from Vancouver, Washington came in and inquired about using the presses. He showed me his work. Very talented man.
Mm-hmm.
And he was very impressed with the studio.
Mm-hmm.
And so
mm-hmm.
I spent about an hour talking to him today and looking at his work. And he wants to come work with us.
Okay,
be
nice.
Great.
Nice. So if there is someone listening who has a passion for this, first thing you want to do is check out, you might be already there, but John's at the Astoria Visual Arts, the AVA Pop-Up Gallery. That's 80 11th Street. The easier thing to say is 11th Street and the water.
Correct,
basically,
yes.
It is as far as you can go. And then it's up on the second floor, and I don't believe there's an elevator.
No.
So you do need to make your way up there. Sure, there'll be a sign out showing that that's where the art walk is. And this is tomorrow evening again between 5 and 7. And you'll be there?
Yes, I will.
Okay. So you can check in with John and see the work and then see where it takes you. I love this story of just being so inspired that you dropped the other and went for it. And I think that sounds... you know, when something talks to your heart, you talk
right
back.
Yeah, I fell in love with it.
Yeah, that's terrific. Well, congratulations on, and the pop-up gallery, will it be open for other times that people can come?
Yeah.
Okay. So you can check that out as well. Thank you so much, John Clark. Also of Astoria some of the time. And so you will see him and his work. Thanks.
Okay, thanks for having me, Carol.
You bet. I've got some music for you from my next guest, and I'll let you listen, and then David Hall is going to tell us about the concert tomorrow night, the Russian Gold Concert, with our good friends Sergei Antonov and Ilya Kazantsev. While David's coming in, I do want to tell you, again, tonight is Chris Parker at Kala. It's also Kate and the Crocodiles at NCRD in the Halem. Sandtrap is June Bugs. The Adrift has music all week. The Library at 6 has Blade Runner film. Barn Community Playhouse, The Edge of Darkness. Friday and Saturday at 7, Sunday at 2. And this is the last night, I believe, of the Pacific University Readers. Writers, Sanjeev Bhattacharya and Laura Hendry at the Best Western and Seaside. Again, this weekend, check out the Martin Luther King celebration and honoring. Tonight, the Labor Temple is opening for music, Brand New Regime, Supergiant Lizard. And, sorry, that's tomorrow night, so I didn't say that. And then the Astoria Art Walk, the Liberty Tillamook Head Gathering. We talked about it last week with Brian Bovenizer and the new Old Stock and Max Strosi and John Mercero and Jim Stewart. Support the arts in Seaside High School. Hoffman Gallery, Art in White, 2 to 4 Fridays and Saturdays, and then York tomorrow evening. Cannon Beach Gallery has an opening, Line, Light, and Layers from 6 to 7:30. They also have a workshop at 11 a.m. And Columbia Theater in Longview, Hell's Bells, that's B-E-L-L-E-S, Women's Band, Seaside Library, Linda Edelston, and Maddox Studio Auditions for Children, Ballet Dancers. Sunday, Grace Church, 11 to 1, Belgian artist with photographer with Paris, an expression of Christianity through the centuries. And Fort George, an American forest, Sunday afternoon live on the rocks. A cappella men's chorus from University of Oregon. AAUW is on Tuesday, along with the Columbia River Maritime Museum and the Manzanita Writers Series online. And next Thursday, Betty Lou Krause at the Salt Hotel and the Cannon Beach History Museum talking about dying, and TNT with John Gutenberger.
Yeah, we're listening to Vocalese by Sergei Rachmaninoff, that's Opus 34, number 14. And the artists are in the incredible Sergei Antonov and the ubiquitous Carrie Lewis.
Oh, Carrie.
This is a recording from the radio broadcast on KCBB of the Astoria Music Festival back in 2010.
Oh, my goodness.
And a little later, we'll hear some music from 2009, from not 2009, from the later time. And we'll hear a piece of music that is going to be played tomorrow night at 7:30 p.m. at the Liberty Theater as the Astoria Music Festival presents Sergei Antonov and Ilya Kazantsev.
What? Okay.
And we're going to hear some more Rachmaninoff. This time it is Sergei and Ilya. And they're in the performance of Rachmaninoff's Sonata for Cello and Piano.
Okay, I'm going to put that on. But David, this is David Hall, who is a programmer here at Coast Community Radio, and he sits on the bench over at KCPB these days.
That's
is that right?
And then Sunday night, I'll be here right at that
on
position.
KMUN.
Yes.
Right, with Sunday.
With little Beethoven.
That's
yes.
Great. So I'm going to put on now the, this is from Sergei Antonov and Ilya Kazantsev, Astoria Special Edition. And
we're hearing the Andante movement, the third movement of the Sonata for Cello and Piano. One of the most beautiful pieces of music that Rachmaninoff wrote, this and a couple other slow pieces like the Adagio from his Second Symphony. Most melodic and sensual music you'll ever hear.
And these two performers are exquisite.
Yes, we have
artists.
A Moscow, we have a Tchaikovsky Prize winner in Antonov and a Nikolai Rubinstein winner in Kazantsev. And Rubinstein, of course, was one of the founders of the Moscow Conservatory, where they both went to school.
Yeah, if you haven't heard them before, if you've been lucky enough to be here, they have been, Sergei especially, has been coming for the Astoria Music Festival.
This will be the 10th year.
Wonderful. And then one year he brought this guy,
Ilya,
another good-looking guy. Well, I didn't know who he was.
It wasn't me she's talking about. She's talking about Ilya.
No, it wasn't David. No, sorry, folks. It was this another good-looking young man, and he sat here, and I said, this is how little I knew. I knew Sergei was a professional musician.
Right.
I had no idea who Ilya was. And I said, so do you perform regularly too? And he just gave that little tiny smile he has, you know.
Yeah.
That. And he said, oh, yes.
Yeah, he was the winner of the Nikolai Rubinstein Prize in Paris, and the same year that Sergei won in Moscow.
Amazing. And they've been friends, though, for a long time.
Since the third grade.
Yeah.
They grew up together. But professionally, they didn't meet until one day in New York after they were both over here.
Oh, I did not realize
that.
Yeah. Well, for me, the way they work together, in addition to each of them being consummate musicians,
right,
their communication and it's exquisite. It's beautiful to watch.
I remember the first time Sergei played in Astoria. It was on a Saturday, the 20th of June in 2009. The evening was to be an introduction piece, the first half of the program. The second half was the Beethoven Chorale, the Ninth Symphony. And they had the combined choruses of Cannon Beach and North Coast Chorale and Columbia Choir. And people turn out to see Beethoven's Ninth, big time. But the next day, all they were talking about was Sergei.
Yeah, yeah.
I tell you that I'd seen great cellists. I happened to see Casals and Janigro in a house concert some 60 years earlier. And I sat as mesmerized as the rest of the audience. The reviewers of music often use the term, he was one with his music, you know, with his position, with his instrument.
Yes.
On this night, Sergei, the audience, his cello, and Rachmaninoff, or Tchaikovsky, rather, were all one.
Yeah, yeah.
I've never seen anything like it before. The next day, I parked down. There was a concert in the afternoon. I parked down in front of J.C. Penney's, which isn't there anymore. And walking back, there's clusters of people all talking about Sergei.
Wonderful. Let's remind folks, your opportunity is tomorrow evening. You can go to Art Walk, and then you can head over to the Liberty Theater. That's on 12th
p.m.
and Commercial. And the concert begins at 7:30. Come earlier, of course, because you want to be able to get in there and be ready for the concert. Don't wait till the last minute.
Absolutely. You know, this man draws 1,400 people at the Moscow Conservatory's
auditorium. We are extraordinarily fortunate that Sergei seems to have fallen in love with Astoria, as Astoria has fallen in love with him, and Ilya is right behind him.
Absolutely.
So it's
absolutely
wonderful. So tomorrow night at the Liberty, be there latest, 7:15, latest, and enjoy this magnificent concert. Thanks for being with us. Thanks, David, for coming in and talking. I'm going to let the music take us out. And this is, again,
it's the Andante from the Sonata for Cello and Piano by Sergei Rachmaninoff and performed by Sergei Antonov and Ilya Kazantsev.
Wonderful. And you see how well he pronounces those? You too can do it. Just come and see the concert. It rubs off on you. Thanks for being here, folks. Coast Community Radio, KMUN Astoria, KTCB Tillamook, coastradio.org, wherever you are in the world. Stay tuned to Coast Community Radio. And give it a thoughtful, everyday thoughtful. Think about other people. Think about people who are in need. And do your honoring of Martin Luther King.